We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land where this podcast episode was produced. SBS Italian pays our respects to the Cammeraygal people of the Gurungay Nation and their elders, past and present. We also acknowledge the traditional owners from all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands you're listening from today. Italian cuisine is one of Australia's favourites, and there's no doubt Italian cuisine is a celebrity in the world of food. But there are many dishes, weird and wonderful specialities that don't make it beyond the Italian border. Today's dish is beautiful and delicious, but it can hurt for many hours or days, even before you eat it. My name is Massimiliano Gugore, and in this SBS Italian podcast series, I'll tell you the story of ugly dishes that tell us something new about Italian cuisine and the love that Italians have for food. It is not just Italians who love risotto. Perhaps it's one of the most popular preparations of Italian cuisine. Mushroom, pumpkin, saffron. But some prefer to make it with spiky, poisonous plants collected anywhere they can be found, even in metropolitan meadows.
A cross between some mint and some Christmas holly.
Or nettles.
Is it the one that's sort of like, if you touch it, it stings you a little bit?
I'm not sure if I've eaten them, but I'd be happy to give it a go, no problem.
I've also eaten things with nettle and they've always been delicious.
If it doesn't sting too much, yeah, I'll probably try it, yeah.
Do they clean the prickles off it?
No, you can consume it. I actually would be curious to find out how it tastes and bite back at it.
Stinky nettles are a popular ingredient in many Italian regions, especially in the north. And one of the most tried and tested recipes that features them is risotto with nettles. The protagonist of our chat today with Matt Purbrick, author, farmer, winemaker, and together with his partner Lentil, behind the Grown and Gather project, which is all about traditional food preparation and ecological farming. Hi, Matt.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Now, Matt, you live between Italy, Germany, and Australia now. Australia, which is where you're from originally. Do you agree that it's hard to find someone who doesn't like risotto?
Definitely. My gosh. When we were writing our books for Grown and Gathered, we were always like, no, we want to cut this out. They were like, do another risotto dish. Put another one of those. People love it.
People love it. And there's an infinite variety. But today we're talking about this one in particular, the one with nettles. So let's talk first about nettles. If I say nettles, what do you think of? What's your reaction?
Well, memories of pain, basically. For a year of my life, actually, my job was to collect nettles. Well, part of my job that I had for a year was to collect nettles every week for the restaurants in Melbourne. I was working for an organic food producer in Victoria, and we provided really nice veggies down to the Melbourne restaurants. And part of that was foraging for wild greens. And so we'd be out just driving around the countryside to find trees that were just full of nettles underneath them, because they're always growing where all the sheep poo. In Australia.
Right. Any reason for that?
All the sheep would crowd under these trees for shade during the summer. And so they'd be doing their business underneath the trees. And then when spring came and the rains came and things warmed up, all the nettles, which could handle that environment, but nothing else could because it was so high in nitrogen and phosphorus, all the nettles would come up. So you had these super, super healthy nettles that would be in there. But I just didn't matter what gloves you wore. Or what shoes you wore, you know, when you're walking in these fields, like little tiny fields of nettles, it was just, it hurt always.
How does it hurt? Can you describe that feeling for people who haven't experienced it?
It's a shock. It's like touching something hot, like hot metal, that feeling of just instant pain. It doesn't make any sense. Like you just brush past these things and it really hurts. But the interesting thing is if you grab them, and you grab them firmly and like straight away, it won't sting you. So if you crush the hairs before they can get you, then it won't sting you. So it's just like, even when you're picking them, the only way to do it is with like absolute commitment and you've just got to get in there. But then invariably when you're in a whole field of this, you're brushing past everything else. And so that's the trick. It only gets you if you're not really just committed to doing what you're doing.
And how long does the pain last?
Oh, well, actually, because you've set me this challenge to make the risotto.
Yeah.
I have been foraging these nettles. I'm in Berlin at the moment, and so I've gone around. It's sort of coming into winter here. We've already had the first snow, actually, but the nettles have survived because they're tough. And so I got out to some of my favorite patches where we've collected them before. I was like, I've got to get this done. And so I did what I always do. I just picked them up, had bare hands. And so I was picking and picking and picking, and I was picking them firmly, and so I wasn't getting stung, but I couldn't feel the tips of my fingers. It was like an anesthetic between my thumb and my finger. Literally, I couldn't feel it for, like, I reckon 12 hours after that. I woke up the next morning and I still couldn't feel this tip of my index finger. So it's a funny little poison. It's not too bad, but it lasts. It sticks around. I used to be very itchy after these days working for this farm.
Sometimes when people overseas think of Australia, they imagine dangers almost everywhere. Sharks, crocodiles, gigantic spiders. Certainly there is some truth in that. But we know that life here down under is not constantly under risk. However, it might not help this reputation to share that Australia is home to the most poisonous nettle in the world, the Gympie Gympie. I was very curious to know more about it and got in touch with Maurizio Rossetto, who leads the research centre at the Sydney Botanic Gardens.
In Australia, we call them stinging trees, and we call them stinging trees for a reason. They're covered with hair which are as sharp as glass, and they're really, really small, and they contain a small quantity of a neurotoxin. But the problem is that the leaves and even in some cases the fruits and the bark are covered with those hair. And as you brush against them, those hair enter into your skin, release the toxin, and you can't get rid of them. And the pain can last for days and recurrently come back sometimes for months or even years.
Can you die?
Apparently so. I don't know if from a direct reaction, but apparently people have died more as with heart failure from the shock and the pain.
Compared to the Italian ones, little ones that we go and pick to eat, these you can't eat probably.
Yeah, so I wouldn't suggest to anyone to eat them. And urban legend, I find it very hard to believe, but the urban legend is that in the old days when the European colonizer first came to Australia, as a joke, people used to suggest that you should use those leaves as toilet paper because they're big and they look very soft. And so that would have been a bit of a shock. But I find it very hard to believe because the ease that you would have picked it up, you would have known that's not something you would use as toilet paper.
Yeah. But they look very, very different from the one we used to back in Europe.
Yes, we're talking about a 40-meter-tall tree that sometimes can have a circumference of many meters. They are beautiful, beautiful, beautiful trees once they're fully grown, at least one of the species. The Gympie Gympie is a little bit smaller, but still can get to 4 or 5 meters. And the leaves are the size of a dinner plate, so they're big leaves.
Do you know if First Nations have used these trees somehow?
There was a range of usages. The bark is pretty good to make strings. They were also using the bark itself and other products as medicine against the stings. The fruit is palatable, and birds certainly eat them a great distance. But as I was mentioning before, there are hair inside the fruit as well. So I've eaten them before, but after spending 10 minutes plucking every single hair out of the fruit. So again, I wouldn't advise doing so.
Okay, but those at least you can eat, but you can't have a Gympie Gympie risotto then.
Please no, don't do that. I would advise you very much against it. Nettle, the ones in Europe, you can just put them in hot water for half a minute or whatever and they neutralize, whereas this you wouldn't be able to get rid. In fact, the hair on the surface of the leaves still sting once they've been put in the herbarium. So we've got a herbarium here in the Botanic Gardens, and some of those samples have been collected over 100 years ago, collected, dried, pressed. All the samples still have skull and crossbone on it as a warning not to touch, and you can still get stung even with gloves. And again, I can talk that from experience. They can still sting you through the gloves.
Sounds like this tree does a very, very good job at protecting itself.
Oh, yes. Not many things eat it aside from insects. And some insects can actually eat the bigger leaves. And they can because they are tiny, tiny, tiny little insects that eat around the, the needles. As you know, in nature, in evolution, it's always a race competing between the ones that want to eat you and the ones that want to avoid to be eaten.
And sometimes the little guy wins.
Yeah, sometimes the little guy wins.
What do nettles taste like?
They taste like a very earthy spinach, I would say. They're super, super high in chlorophyll. They're like one of the highest greens, like land-based greens that we regularly eat, that humans sort of tend to regularly eat or traditionally have done so, is the richest in chlorophyll. So when you cook them, I think there's almost like a seafood oceanic kind of characteristic, because so much algae drives that food system. So it's kind of like the land spirulina. Spirulina is all the rage these days, and the super greens. Nettles is definitely in that category. And I think that very high, sort of that very green, earthy richness is what drives their use traditionally. I mean, it's such a strong flavor, such a great flavor.
But you're not afraid of them then. You can face the challenge now. And your child probably is a bit too young now, but would you take your children to collect nettles? Is it a safe activity?
She's 6 months at the moment, so I'm not going to try.
Not yet.
Not going to teach her to grasp the nettle just yet, but soon. I think that would be a really cool thing. I think it's teaching her all of this stuff, all of these skills of foraging and being able to, like, even in urban environments, see food is a really exciting prospect for me as a papa. I think that's going to be a really nice thing to do.
What's great about foraging?
We used to write about this stuff so much, and it always came back to the same feeling for me of this sort of, it puts you in a certain headspace, a certain very ancient headspace and very ancient part that's deep in you of just being at one with what's around you and searching for something so simple as food. You don't walk into the supermarket and this mechanism switches on, you know. You've got to get out. You can be in an urban environment. You can be completely like surrounded by buildings but still have an eye out for fruit and for leaves that you can eat. And when you tune into that, I think it's a really nice feeling. It's a really grounding feeling. So whether you go out to a forest or whether you just explore your parks and explore your laneways, I think there's just something very fulfilling about going out and finding yourself that sort of food in the way that we've always done it. Yeah, it's a cool feeling.
In some shops, stinging nettles can be bought. But traditionally, and still today, it is mostly a matter of picking them in the wild. Foraging. Most of us will consider this a rather unusual activity. It's so much easier to just go to the shops for food, or now, even online. Someone who begs to differ is Diego Bonetto, author of the book Eat Weeds, a guide on how to identify, collect, eat, and use wild plants.
Nettle is super nutritious. It's high in iron, vitamins. Nettle is one of the most respected medicinal plants, very good for your health, very good for your hair. You make nettle shampoo and it's good for your hair. Nettle is yummy.
How do you cook it? How do you prepare it? And in what recipes do you use it?
I use all sorts of recipes. I grew up in a dairy farm in Italy, and traditionally we used to eat nettles in frittatas, just cooked up with eggs. But also in the years, I also did all sorts of things because I work a lot with chefs, and we made bread, nettle bread. We made nettle gnocchi, nettle risotto, and so forth. You know, just so much you can do. It's an outstanding vegetable.
Now it sounds everything is great, everything is wonderful, but they hurt.
It hurts. That's why it's good. Yes, nettle hurts. Nettle does hurt. So use your gloves when you go and harvest. Be careful. They see the hairs on the leaves and on the stalk. They made of silica. And if they break on your skin, you get irritated. And that's what burns. If you touch nettle, particularly if you don't know what you're doing, you just go up nettles like if it was any old green, you're going to get hurt. And depending on colony, it hurts from 3 hours to 3 days.
Pain for 3 days. Is it worth it?
It is totally worth it. It's excellent food. And the hurt is just a tingling that stays in your hand. It keeps you alive.
It makes you feel alive.
It makes you feel alive and keeps you alive too.
Nettles are used just in Italian food or in Italian culture, or is it something you find also in other countries like Australia?
Nettle is used for food and medicine all over the world. We also have a native nettle here in Australia that indigenous people knew very well and used. Traditionally, nettle is a much loved food in Anglo-Saxon countries, and German people love it. German people up to very recently used nettle for fiber. Famously, the Second World War uniform were made of nettle. So nettle is more than just food and medicine. It's also fiber.
And if someone who's listening to this is a bit, you know, worried or scared about the idea of having to find food in the wild, what can we tell them?
Identification is key, and identification is an acquired skills. If you've never done foraging before, if you never harvesting anything from the wild, go out with someone who can teach you, get some books, go on YouTube, get some basic skills. Go slow, learn 2-3 plants at first, learn them well, and then from there you progress. Nettle is a great one to learn first. You know why? You can't make a mistake. If you touch it, and it hurts, it's nettle.
Where do you find nettles?
Nettles is very common wherever there's good soils around creeks, around rivers, in farmlands. Usually you find nettles wherever there's been cattle or poultry or sheep roosting, you know, so wherever there's very high nutrient soils, you find nettle around there. Lots of people cultivate purposely nettle in their garden, like I grow it in my garden, in the corn, because I love it. And it's also very good for the soil. So, you know, people put it purposely in their garden to feed the soil. Usually in city is suppressed because when councils see and stakeholders, whoever is managing the parks or whatever, see nettles, they go around and slash it because they do not want people to complain.
Can we say that it's worth the risk?
Nettle, definitely worth the risk. Use gloves. Nettle, there's lots of people who grow it in the garden because it's so good. Why would you grow a plant that stings you unless there is value to it?
And you were saying that just before our podcast, you tried to cook with nettles when you made the risotto. How did that go?
It was great because I've never done this before. When you reached out and were like, let's do this thing, I was like, yes, this is very cool. Because normally at this time of year, I'll have given up on a lot of the greens because it's either been snowed on or it's just got too cold. And they, after the summer, they've gone through their flowering and all the stalks get quite woody. And so it's not as fun as springtime when everything's super fresh and super green. And so it forced me to get out there again. And I was like, actually, I need to not be lazy. I need to get out there. And then making this dish, I've never done this with nettles. We've done a lot of things with wild mushrooms during autumn when we get them because you're not getting as much of the greens. And so it's nice to just have it as a bit of an extra thing in a dish with mushrooms. So to actually let nettles be the king of an autumn dish was really fun. And it's now my favorite thing to do with nettles. It's awesome.
Sounds really good. So would you like to give us your recipe for a risotto with nettles?
Yeah, let's do it. The first step, obviously, is to actually go and get your nettles because it's not always such an easy thing to get, right? We had like 4 people coming around, so this is for about 4 to 6 people. So if you've got less people, you can halve it. But I had, I don't know any other way to describe this, but a big pot, like one of those big Schosser pots, 5-liter pots, that was full of nettles, but not packed in, just loosely filled. So it had about that much nettles and then about 2 liters of stock. And the stock you can use is any, if you've made homemade brodo, if you've got veggie stock, chicken stock, beef stock, I think that'll all be really good for this. I'd say traditionally, chicken stock was probably preferred for this, or a veggie stock. Like I say about the lamb and the sheep where the nettles grow, maybe lamb stock would be a good idea for this. So give that a go. I did a bit of research into this and tried to pull out some old books as well. And what I've tried to do here is think about how we always try and think, which is to not waste anything as we're cooking. And so rather than preparing the nettles in water, which is common, and then you discard the water, I wanted to cook the nettles in stock and keep that stock and then use that stock to cook the risotto. I think that's a much nicer way And there's a lot of sort of water-soluble vitamins and things in the nettles that go straight into that water. So it's nice to then actually use that, I think. There's probably a little bit more earthiness doing it this way, because that initial kind of earthiness often gets removed if you actually discard the water first. The interesting thing about nettles, for people who haven't used them before, is as soon as you blanch them in a bit of hot water or hot liquid, all of the stingers are deactivated, all those spikes soften, so they're not going to hurt you anymore. So the nettles are hot, so they might burn you, so you've got to let them cool down. But apart from that, they're really ready to use. So the first thing to do is bring your stock to the boil and get all your nettles in a pot, stuff them in there. It'll be really full. You've got to push them under and just leave them in there for a couple of minutes. You can move them around a little bit for 2 to 3 minutes and then get them out basically with tongs or something. So keep all that stock in the pot, and it will have taken on a bit of a greener, more earthy colour as well, which is nice. And squeeze out then any extra liquid that you can. So maybe put your nettles in a colander and then sort of the back of a ladle push down so you get all that liquid out. Once you've got your nettles, then set them aside and just let them cool down a bit, because you're going to have to play with them with your hands to get all the nice soft leaves off the stalks. And you can just leave them aside for 5 minutes while you cut a couple of French shallots or onions, small onions, and a couple of cloves of garlic. But again, if you're halving the recipe, just one onion and one clove of garlic is enough. So get them both all finely diced, and by that time you should have your cooled down nettles, and you just strip off all the leaves. So hold one end and just run your fingers down, and it'll strip off all the soft, beautiful bits that you want to eat from the nettles, and you'll be left with the hard stalk on the inside. And that's the only bit that we waste in this recipe, so that can go into the compost, or better yet, throw it back out into the field where you took the nettles from if it's nearby. It's critical to keep the stock on a low heat at the back of the stove, and that'll just keep it just below a boil, because we'll use that to cook the risotto. And so once you've got all those nettles together, this is the other point of diversion now from the more traditional recipes. Of course, back in the day, we didn't have high-powered blenders and Vitamixes and Nutribullets and things like this, not even a stick blender. So it would have been that traditionally, like traditional pesto, you'd finely chop all the nettles, or finely chop all your basil if it was for pesto, and then use a mortar and pestle to really grind out into a paste. So I didn't have a mortar and pestle here, so I got it close to that point, and then we gave it a little blitz in a food processor, in a little blender. But basically, finely chop your nettles. If you've got a mortar and pestle, then I think that's the best way to do this, because it feels like you're doing it the right way. Just a little bit of olive oil and just grind it down. Blend it. It can still be quite a rough paste. It doesn't have to be super, super fine. If you do blend it really, really, really fine, what you'll find is that you get a more green risotto in the end. It'll feel like it's almost like the green equivalent of a squid ink pasta or a squid ink risotto, where you get the really black feeling. You'll get a really green outcome if you really, really blend it down to liquid. But trying to keep it more traditional, I think just rough is good. Rough is fine. And it matches what we're trying to talk about here, I think. So once you have that paste, you'll end up with a couple of cups worth of paste. From all those nettles, it'll come down to this like tiny little ball of paste that you've got. And then it's just about producing this very, very simple risotto base that will fold that green nettle into. So then we just take the shallots that we've cut up, a little bit of olive oil. When I say a little bit, be generous. And then get that hot on about a medium heat in a big pan. Saute down those shallots till they're soft. Then add in some garlic after the shallots or onions have softened a little bit. Keep that cooking for another couple of minutes till you get some color and aroma coming through on the garlic. And then you can begin to add in your rice, your arborio or another risotto rice. And then you have to toast that rice, like with the risotto always, toast that rice, get it coated in the oil, get it coated in all the flavors, add a bit of salt and pepper. So once the rice, it sort of will be totally coated with oil and will be beginning to go quite translucent. But these are all visual things, and I've always liked cooking. I think the grandma way, the nonna way, the nonny way is to smell. And so when the rice smells like it's ready, it'll be about 5 minutes of toasting this rice. You can just start to smell that smell in the risotto. You can smell the rice. You can smell it getting toasted. You can smell that beautiful aroma coming up. That's when you add wine. So a cup and a half of wine, and that will deglaze the pan. Your pan will be super hot, so it'll bubble up really fast, and then it'll just boil up all that liquid And once that liquid's boiled off, you can then reduce to a lower heat. The important thing that I didn't say is you've got to stir, stir, stir. Once you get that rice in, that's the beginning of your commitment to stir. You have to just keep on stirring. And this is the one thing we wrote in a book once, or was on the blog or something. We had this no stir risotto, like the lazy man's risotto, where you can just cook it like rice and get everything together and then put a lid on and leave it. Definitely not the way risotto should be cooked. Risotto is a commitment, and you just got to pour yourself a glass of wine, grab your wooden spoon, and just be at that pot until the risotto is done. And this is always the way. So it's the nonna approach. At this point now, that's when we ladle in the first couple of ladles of broth, the brodo of stock, and then continue to stir and just keep that liquid level up a little bit. You can let it then evaporate and absorb into the rice. And you keep on stirring, 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 and you keep on ladling in stock. And we're going to do this for about half an hour for the amount of rice that we used, but it would be significantly less. It would probably only be 20 minutes if you have this recipe, because it will cook a lot faster with a smaller amount of rice because the heat will stay up a lot hotter. After about 5 minutes and you've got everything softening a little bit, that's when you can start to add your nettle paste. And so you can just spoon that in one spoon at a time and stir it through as you go, until it's all stirred in, and you'll find then your risotto really starts to look like you want it to look, which is very green, very bright green. Nettles have this intense bright green, which is so nice. It's funny that this is a podcast about ugly dishes, but I find this, the green of this dish is just so remarkable. It's such a beautiful thing. So wonderful to have that green appear. Remain committed. Keep sipping your wine. Keep stirring. Keep ladling in your stock. After you've got all the nettles in, you can then, after another 5 or so minutes, you can add the butter, big knob of butter, 100 grams of butter, and let the butter melt through, and that'll add a nice creaminess to it. But you're still only about halfway through cooking. Continue to stir, continue ladling, and after about 30 minutes, 35 minutes, your rice will be soft. And that's what you're looking for. You want rice to be super soft and just a little bit of crunch. In all those arborio grains, you'll have a really nice little crunch left in every grain. And that's when you're perfect, and it's just where you want to be with the cooking. At the same time, you should find that the last ladle won't absorb as much as the other ones were. So it's hot and it's saucy, and you've got this green sauciness that's really lovely around it. And every grain is in a sort of soupy, almost swimming thing. It's really important that it still feels soft and soupy, because it's going to firm up as you put it on the plate. I want to be able to put a ladle of this on a plate and sort of shake the plate, and it will spread itself out. You don't want it to be like rice that just sits there in a block together. You want it to be very loose and very saucy. Once you've got that, you've got that consistency, that nice softness with a tiny bit of crunch, that's when you're ready to go. And then we'll have a heap of Parmesan that we've grated earlier, about 60 grams of Parmesan for the amount I'm talking. If you love Parmesan, put more in by all means. If you love butter, put more in by all means. Butter and cheese are the key to delicious risotto, in my opinion. So add that in, add a little bit at a time, stir it through so it's not all lumpy. Make sure it's really nice and smooth through the whole dish. And that's it. It's ready to go. I mean, it only takes, once you're going with your risotto, half an hour for a portion like this that will serve up to 6 people. So beautiful on the plate, a little bit of extra Parmesan, a bit of olive oil on top. Buon appetito.
So it sounds like nettles are worth the little risk, right?
100%, 100%. I'm going to start doing nettle tours around Berlin so we can cook this dish together.
Now, how have you used the nettles in the past? Because this was your first risotto, but you cooked with them before.
Yeah, I mean, we've always just used them as a green substitute. So any recipe that you'd use spinach or chard or anything like that for. We've made quiches with it, frittata with it, used it in risottos, but not as like such an intense main component. But I think it's really nice as well in soup with forage mushrooms. So with pine mushrooms and slippery jack mushrooms, with a very simple chicken brodo, it's a really beautiful addition to these kind of soups because it has such a strong earthy flavor. And we generally do this technique of sort of mortaring them down into a paste. And just to make a pesto out of nettles like that is really, really great as well. Often what we'll do in springtime is harvest a heap of the fresh, fresh green nettles because they're so young and they're so soft. And you don't even really need to strip any of the leaves. And we'll prepare a heap of them, and then we'll just do that blanching step in salted water and then put them away in the freezer to have throughout the rest of the year, because it's such a nice time to just have them. And then it's like having frozen spinach in your freezer. You just have this really healthy wild green sitting there ready to use.
Who is Anna Del Conte? And why do we talk about her today? Anna is the woman who basically introduced Great Britain to Italian food, having moved there from Italy after World War II. When she wrote her autobiography, the title referenced one of her favorite dishes. Yes, risotto with nettles. The most famous of food writers and celebrity chefs, Nigella Lawson, once wrote, "There are only two important influences in my cooking life, my mother and Anna Del Conte." Isn't this right, Nigella?
It's completely right. They complement one another. They're very different cooks. But I think it was Anna who led me to be a food writer. My mother taught me, or didn't teach me how to cook, but we learnt from her. But in Anna, I saw the possibilities, I think, because she managed to combine her learning, her interest in food, with a sort of practicality that made me see you could fulfill both obligations as a food writer. You could really investigate what food can do, how you cook it, where it comes from, what the history is. There's so many different factors in food writing because, of course, food is about the whole of life. And Anna does that and has done it consistently for so long and in such a quiet way. She's not a shouter, but I think she's a remarkable person, and perhaps more remarkable even than her books are.
Anna Del Conte kindly sent me a few notes with some of the memories that link her to the dish that gives the title to her autobiography, Risotto with Nettles. Would you like to read them for us and be Anna's voice, Nigella?
I would be honoured. Actually, the title was chosen by my editor. I had chosen Truffles and Toscanini, but she rightly found it too elitist. I don't find anything strange in looking for ingredients in the wild. Since we were children, we used to collect erbette, that is small grass in Italian, in the meadows on the outskirts of Milan in spring, and mushrooms in the woods of Brianza in autumn. My mother was a great forager. I myself have taught my grandchildren the pleasure of cooking and enjoying the food collected in the fields or in the woods. When I arrived here in England in 1950, people were just picking blackberries. I never got hurt making risotto with stinging nettles because I always used rubber gloves. The only time I was very unpleasantly stung was when I threw myself into a nettle meadow to protect myself from allied strafing. In that moment, I decided that nettles were preferable to bullets. Even today, I don't know when, every year in April, I prepare a good risotto with nettles. It's true, it's not the prettiest dish. Risotto with nettles is more pleasant to your palate than to your eyes. I don't care. I feel if I were really doing Anna, I would say, I don't care. Got that, you know.
Hi, I'm Matt Purbrick from Grown and Gathered, and we're talking about stinging nettle risotto. Risotto alle ortiche.
Now, you live between, we said, Italy, Germany, Australia. Did you find any difference in these three countries in the culture of foraging or the tradition, and how that's a normal thing for some, but very unusual for others?
Yeah. I mean, Australia and Germany, in my experience, and this will be, I'm sure, different in different parts of Germany because it's a very diverse country. But we're based in Berlin when we're here, and it's very modern. And there's a flowering of this culture again in this city, much like in Australia. This movement's been happening now for the last decade, which we're so happy to be a part of. You know, 10 years ago when all of this was emerging back into the kind of collective consciousness in Australia, people getting out and foraging things and getting up in the hills and foraging things. And suddenly it wasn't just a few strange people doing this that no one took seriously. Suddenly it was beautiful and real and connected and connective as well. It brought people together. So in Australia, I sort of see it as this reclaiming of something that had been lost. I think there's such potential in Australia as we now begin to reckon finally in some way, potentially meaningfully, with our past as a country. We have so much potential to learn the native foods of our country and to learn where they come from and where to find them. And there's a lot of knowledge to be spread for everyone to sort of really embrace that, what it means to live in Australia. Of course, in Europe and Italy, we live here the culture that Australia has been living in this last recent amount of decades since settlement. And so it's a different thing over here. It's so nice to just get out into the hills. We lived in Italy for the last 3 years before we moved up here to Berlin mainly. And we were living down on Sardinia on the island. I listened to your last episode of the Casu Marzu and, oh, it's an intense cheese.
Yes.
I've had that. But on the island, we used to go out with, the, you know, you were always foraging something, whether it was orbezzolo, the wild fruits in the hills, or just picking wild olives, wild figs, wild greens. It's intense. And I love that in Italy, we still have that really strong connection. My family in Veneto, north of Venice, up in the mountains near a place called Belluno, we still go out and look for wild greens up in the hills. They're so abundant. And a lot of the nettles and the nettle dishes traditionally have come from the north and up in the Alps and in the mountains as well, because it's a bit more moist, and that combination of moist soils and sun can be really great for the nettles and for the wild greens in general. So I really feel like foraging is in all of us. It's really lovely in Italy specifically that kind of activity is so common still. It's just such a common pastime for young people, old people, everyone, which I find really, really heartwarming that we've held on to that in Italy. Whereas it's nice to see, on the other hand, in places like Berlin, even, and places like Melbourne and the rest of Australia, that people are re-engaging with these techniques and these cultural practice that is so ancient for us as humans. So yeah, it's nice to see it just emerging everywhere now. I'm grateful for that, and it's nice that people want to learn about it.
So good for the soul and good for the wallet also, and good for the tummy apparently. There's a lot of nice ingredients that you can find. Is there anything else that we might need to watch out for? Anything else that's a little maybe dangerous, toxic, poisonous out there?
Well, nettles are so identifiable that if we're talking about nettles, then you're absolutely great. If you can just look at a picture of nettles and go find a patch of them, then you're going to know it's a nettle. Plus, if you touch them gently, they'll tell you it's a nettle. Don't worry. If you're obviously going to forage mushrooms or things like that, make sure you go with someone who knows. You know, it's just too dangerous to not know what you're doing when you're foraging things like mushrooms. And if you're foraging greens in the city especially, but also this applies to rural areas for sure, because there's no sure way. You want to know that it hasn't been sprayed, obviously, by pesticides and things like that, that the council hasn't come through, which if you've watched a patch for a few days and it's healthy and alive, then you're pretty safe. But it's always good to know where you're picking. It's always good to know if you're picking on a farm. Talk to the farmer or ask locals about, you know, what's happening, what's around. Make sure it's safe in that way.
But nettles are low risk.
Nettles are definitely low risk. I mean, it's risky because you're probably going to get stung by one of them, but that's fine. It's really not that big a deal. There's literally a biodynamics book called Grasp the Nettle. And it's all about just really committing to engaging with nature and listening to nature's cycles. And I love that title. And it's totally true. If you grasp them hard enough, it won't sting you.
Thank you so much to Matt Perbrick then for taking us around the countryside of Germany, of Italy and of Australia to forage for nettles and prepare this risotto. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks, Max. Thanks for having me on.
There's a word in Italian that's now very common in English, panini. In our next episode, you'll learn how you should say panino instead of panini if it's only one you're having. And then we'll take you to Palermo, and for your filling, we'll suggest spleen, lungs, and windpipe. This episode was hosted and produced by me, Massimiliano Gugole, with support from the executive producer of SBS Italian, Magica Fossati, as well as Max Gosford, Joel Supple, and Caroline Gates. A big thank you to the SBS Food team for their support as well. For more SBS Italian content, go to sbs.com.au/Italian. Or to find more SBS podcasts in English, go to sbs.com.au/audio.